Hanselminutes.com. It's Hanselminutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 62, recorded Thursday, April 19th, 2007. Support for Hanselminutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by Slash N Software Red Carpet Subscriptions, the most comprehensive solution for adding connectivity to your .NET and ASP.NET applications, with components for every major internet protocol. Online at www.nsoftware.com. And by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, we continue with Scott and Chris Sells discussing the past and future of programming.
There are so many, there's so much existing functionality on my box. If I had some way to list all of the DLL calls I could make and all of the exes I could call with command line arguments and all of the COM objects and all of the .NET classes.
It's
and
a big surface area.
It's a huge surface area. And so if I'm going to navigate that surface area, I want some help. And the help, the thing I do is I go, well, I'm going to, I think, in system.networking is something I want. So I'll go system.networking. Here's the thing. And that's how I learn.
Actually, there's so much functionality now. The one thing that I have to do is whenever I find that function, I think I've found, I've discovered that function, I have to go see if it's obsolete now.
Oh, well, see, that's the beauty of .NET. It'll tell you.
Yeah, it will.
Although I have to say load with partial name is the most used function call that's marked obsolete that I've ever seen.
Well, I got the whole guy. That's a whole other talk. We should do a whole talk about the loader sometime. I mean, the whole load from, load file. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like 90% of every little bit of plug-in code I find scattered around the bathroom wall of code that is the internet. everyone is calling assembly.load from, and I just want to go...
Well, and that's not their fault. I mean, it's our fault.
No, it's assembly.load from's fault.
The fault is that .NET really doesn't have a decent plug-in technology. Right? This idea.
The provider model wasn't built in from the very
start. No, it really wasn't. And unlike COM, which has a wonderful one, really does. That was one of the things I would say that we lost when we went from COM to .NET. And I anticipate us putting it back. It's just we haven't yet.
When?
Someday.
Pop.
Okay. So, I would say that IntelliSense was huge for me. What happened after IntelliSense?
So you're saying that the last 15 years, the only really interesting programming thing that happened was visual programming and IntelliSense.
No. We're just three into the list.
We're also a half an hour into our podcast.
Well, that's because we're wordy bastards. What do you want?
We are wordy. So if you just listen to the first 5 minutes and then fast forward to 30 minutes. So we got IntelliSense, we got visual design.
And of course, COM was the first thing, binary components.
COM. The concept of a component model.
Right. And so I would say, so I came up with COM, you came up with visual programming, I came up with IntelliSense, it's your turn.
Lisp.
Yeah, that happened in the last 15 years.
I know. I got nothing.
Really?
There's so much stuff happened before that, though.
Absolutely.
See, I'm thinking garbage collection. Oh, no, dynamic type, no.
Well, I would absolutely say in the last 15 years, obviously not garbage collection, but the popularization of garbage collection.
Sure, the popularization of garbage collection, the popularization of dynamic typing and dynamic languages.
Yeah, I don't know. I go back and forth on that one. I mean, it seems like with dynamic languages, I want some of the capabilities, right? I want to be able to have a reflection mechanism to find out what I've got and to do different things with it.
Right.
And I want to be able to walk up to instances and add data and behavior to them.
Right. We want method missing. You know, I guess you call them static methods now. Method missing is in Ruby. Mm-hmm. I can go and I have a person and I could say person.bark. Mm-hmm. And person would not have a bark. But I could go and make a thing called method missing, which is the function that would get called whenever I call a function that's missing.
Nice.
And then I could then have person have bark. So I could get the person class from you, Chris, and then call person.bark on it and spot weld onto the side of it the new method.
Yeah.
So that has become amongst those kind of wonks, the method missing style programming is the same kind of thing that they do in PowerShell with script properties and script methods, where you go into your PowerShell XML file and you add methods that don't already exist. So, for example, I've always felt that the string class should have a to Base64 string and from Base64 string. Now, I could derive one and then make a...
I don't think you can. I believe the string class is sealed.
Yeah, you're right. But you know what I'm saying. I don't like functionality in this foo class. I'm going to derive one.
So you're familiar with C# 3.0's extension methods?
Yeah, I call them static methods. That was a mistake. Extension methods.
Oh, got it.
There's, the syntax is like big static thing.
But
it's like method missing is extension methods in an iDispatchy kind of a
yes. It's way. Adding functionality at so obviously what did I just call them? Extension methods are extension adding method. It at compile time, and that's a wonderful feature. And method missing
right.
Is a way to do it at runtime. And I want both.
And it's all the OOP purists, though. You know, the followers of the ThoughtWorks crowd that are like, oh, that's not good. You can't... How do you reconcile that? It's just like the whole argument that happened when C# didn't include multiple inheritance. You know what I mean? There was this kind of little kind of...
Actually, I danced the jig in the street when that happened.
But. Well, but there's like a mini uprising, like, but what about this obscure edge case,
Oh, and I sometimes run into it.
And like, well, yeah, but then you work around it with interfaces or whatever.
Yeah. I would say that one of the things that we've got as programmers in the last 15 years is the solidification of objects as a way. Right? I would say that...
There's no other way.
No, I wouldn't say that it's true at all. I mean, there's a bunch of other ways.
There are other ways, but for the business programmer, are they going to pick Haskell as the thing they're going to bet their business on?
Sure.
You could.
Yeah, that's interesting. We could have a whole other talk on that too.
Yeah, we'll do that next week.
Okay. But I would say that, just the pervasiveness of objects as a way of thinking about how to program.
You know what?
All the way through the tools and the debuggers and just everything.
You know what solidified that for me? Was I put my head down somewhere around 2003, and then I brought it up in 2007 and realized that while I was asleep, people had turned JavaScript into a complete object-oriented universe and had built whole object models to reflect reality. And they built, when I had my head down, it was methods and structs.
Yep.
And when I lifted my head up, it was a whole programming language. And then Jeff Atwood at Coding Horror has declared the browser the new IDE.
Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, I mean, you put Firebug or Web Developer Toolbar or Internet Developer, IE Developer Toolbar, and suddenly he spends 90% of his time developing in the browser.
Wow.
Well, because he's using browser plugins that have panes that let him edit the HTML.
Sure.
So he said the browser's the new IDE.
And, of course, the whole thing is all dynamic, right? So as he makes edits, it's all real. He can see it and interact with it in live.
I do almost all of my editing and style sheet work in my blog using the Web Developer Toolbar. And as I type the CSS, the page just dynamically updates.
Wow. So I think that's actually a good segue into what the future of programming is going to bring. Because I think that, just the idea of the designer as what you see is what you get for visuals. I think we're going to, and then the whole kind of, that's really a graphic user interface around this whole idea of, I want to tell the computer what I want and then let it do it, right? A declarative model.
Right. But also the separation, before there was this artificial and uncomfortable separation between design view and runtime view.
Yes.
ASP.NET. Yes. That team, I think, got bit by that more than anyone.
Sure.
Because they built in this notion of, we're going to instantiate your page in the designer, and we're not really going to give it a real HTTP context, so it's not really happening.
Right.
And then you had this situation where it looked one way in design view and another. Now, with kind of increased dynamicism?
Dynamism. Yes.
Within these environments, I think the expectation is that what I'm looking at whether it be in design view or runtime, is the real view.
Yes.
And I think XAML is probably a good example of that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And we're seeing that a lot in UIs, absolutely. And we have for a while, ever since Visual Basic 1. It's been there. But I would say that we also are getting that when it comes to even behavior and data. Mm-hmm. For example, if you would imagine, look at Excel. I probably start up Excel 3 to 5 times a day and write an app, right? I type in some numbers. I put some relationships between those numbers. I get my results. Mm-hmm. And, you know, 4 times out of 5, I throw it away. I've got my results. Sure. I've run my program. I'm done.
Right. So it's electric paper for you.
Exactly right. And, you know, 1 time out of 5, I'll probably save it, come back and build up with new data and add to the app.
Here's a thought. Wouldn't it be nice if Excel, Word, PowerPoint, and OneNote, but I was thinking more specifically of Excel and OneNote, were really the same application? And you remember, you know, like, and then think about tablet PCs in the sense of if I write a bunch of numbers and put a line underneath the bottom, you should sum that.
Sure.
And there were a lot of tablet applications that did that kind of stuff for physics.
Sure.
There was the Physics Illustrator, which was amazing. If you haven't tried this, if you have a tablet PC or you have a Wacom tablet, go and Google for the Physics Illustrator. You literally draw balls, draw a line describing how gravity works.
I've seen this.
And then just say, go.
Yes, it's
absolutely
amazing.
Unreal.
And then didn't they have one too for like mathematical applications where you could like just write down an equation that would figure it out for
you. Wow. But as electric paper, I think, is a place that we're going. Actually, getting into a little bit to user experience, it's kind of embarrassing. I talked about it on my blog, but a friend of mine loaned me his copy of Dance Dance Revolution, which is something you really need to close the shades, if you know what I'm saying.
So I want to know if this is more or less embarrassing than your predilection for runway fashion models.
Hey, I'm a fashionista and a well-dressed one at that, and I'm not ashamed.
Well, I have to say, as we're sitting here in my office, I've got my loose button-up shirt on and my baggy jeans and Scott sitting here.
But I've got a pair of $200 shoes on.
Yes, he does. He's sitting here with it. My sleeves are rolled up. Scott's got – it has to be a freshly pressed shirt on, Scott. I mean, you're looking styling. And, you know, he's got the watch. And, of course, the sleeves are, you know, buttoned at the cuffs. And he's sitting there. I'm just sitting sprawled out on my recliner. Scott's got his leg up. And, you know, he's – every once in a while, he smooths his clothes out.
I don't know if this is the kind of thing we want to paint, the metrosexual programmer. My wife likes me, though, and that's all that matters.
There you go.
My point about Dance Dance Revolution was that I haven't picked up the controller that my Xbox intended me to use.
Oh, really?
In weeks. It's Guitar Hero. It's Dance Dance Revolution. you know, it's the remote control.
Sure.
It's the Media Center PC wireless keyboard.
Oh, you have one of those.
Yeah,
how is that?
Yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
These are all alternative ways to interact with my system.
Oh, man.
And I speculated on my blog a while ago that Bill Gates is spending all this money on voice. And unless you have the greatest computer in the history of the universe, voice and Vista is a lot of like saying something and then saying it again.
Really?
Have you tried it?
Nah.
Run calculator.
Oh.
Run calculator.
Computer.
Right? Computer. Yeah. Computer.
I wonder if we should talk about liquid aluminum as something.
Yeah, Star Trek IV Voyage Home reference. Thank you very much. My point being, though, that what do we have on our...
Oh, sorry. Transparent aluminum.
Transparent aluminum.
I totally got the reference wrong. Sorry about that, folks.
It's okay. It was an Apple SE he was using. He was talking
and he picked up the mouse.
He picked up the mouse and the microphone. Yes. Oh, James Doohan, we hardly knew you.
Yes.
My point was that we've got all these new ways they're trying to have us interact with the computer that are very expensive. Tablet, PC, voice, which costs a lot of CPU, and it's very problematic. But we've got these $30 webcams. You've got an Xbox Live Live Vision camera.
Yes.
Sitting on top of your big screen TV in the next room there.
Yes, I do. I use it for video conferencing with my team.
Why aren't you gesturing Minority Report style?
Oh.
And rather than wearing...
Because I do gesture at my computer.
You do. Rather than wearing gloves, kind of, you know, why aren't we tracking our hands? My point being that, like, giving the example of, like, Vista, if you've got 3-4 windows on the screen at once, and you want to pick one up and push it to another monitor.
Sure.
You can pick the tiny, tiny area, surface area of the title bar.
Sure.
And drag it. you can alt space M and then move it with the keyboard, which I'm sure you do. You're not.
Yes, I do.
But there's only four windows there. Why can't my webcam see my hand and glean my intent to move those four windows? Just as voice recognition can narrow down the number of things that I could possibly intend to say, a hand gesture recognition system, a la Minority Report, could glean that he clearly has just reached out, clenched his hand, and as if he were grabbing something. There's only four things he could want to do. He want to move one of these four windows.
So you're actually talking about almost what the Wii has done with their controller.
Without the controller.
Yes. Yes.
I'm saying that whoever solves that problem is going to have a license to print money.
And have you seen these amazing demonstrations of this guy with this LCD panel?
Daniel Hahn?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Yeah, and he reaches in with all his fingers and he just does these amazing manipulations.
But it's $40,000. I propose that problem can be solved with a $30 webcam. And some really good software.
So you know there are tons of research people, and I'm sure I'm absolutely
Microsoft
positive.
Must be working
I'm
on this.
Sure that somebody at MSR.
But they're
is
not
doing
working on it in that 10 years ago Bill Gates announced that voice and pens were the way of the future.
Sure.
And they're just not quite there yet. They're baked into Ultimate, but they're still niche.
I would definitely agree with that. And I actually had a tablet for a while because I wanted this experience.
Yeah, me too.
And what I found was that a tablet was wonderful once you had the document in front of you that you wanted to read or mark up.
Yeah.
But getting there was impossible without the keyboard, at least for me.
Yeah, I tried writing the first draft of the ASP.NET chapters I wrote for the ASP.NET book totally with a tablet. I had this kind of like, all right, I'm going to go to the cafe and have a coffee.
Did you like sit and write it?
Well, I wrote a page.
And how long did
it
take?
And then I bought a copy of Dragon Naturally Speaking.
Oh, well, that's actually supposed to be really cool.
It's actually very good. It's a lot better than the Vista.
And there's a new Vista version for it, too.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah.
But the quality of the microphone you need is so immense. You need a $100 microphone.
Wow, really?
Yeah. You need a condenser mic. You need a Spectrum mic. You need something quality. You can't just put a headphone on and start spitting into the...
Well, see, this is the basic problem I had with entering content into my tablet. I have terrible handwriting. Right. So we needed a high quality handwriting input mechanism other than me. That was the problem.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. So the kind of Minority Report UI thing you were talking about,
mm-hmm.
it has general purpose use, bringing it back around for future developers.
Mm-hmm.
I think as we get more kind of WYSIWYG with not just UI, but actual data. Bringing back around the Excel reference where if I do a data binding, I actually see the data log.
Were you at that? Was it Tech Ready, Tech Fest?
I wasn't.
There was a thing at Microsoft where Rory did a bunch of stuff on this on Channel 9
cool.
where it was all the research people at a kind of a research festival.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
And
I've been there several times.
Yeah,
in the
so they had this kind of rubbery graphical view thing where it was basically like charts within, you know, data binding and charting,
mm-hmm.
except. The data points they actually transitioned with animation. So you would turn a bar chart into a pie chart and they did all the tweening, the onion skinning, you know, dynamically such that if this bar represents this data point, then you can see it during the transition, stay that bar, start to morph into a piece of a pie.
Wow. So
very
fluid. So you could watch. This is okay. I know where this data is in this graph, and now I'm going to see where it is in this other graph.
Exactly.
And hopefully, the different visualizations would give me better understanding of my data.
It gives you context, so the actual animation itself is providing you data as an analyst.
Oh, and that's the Xerox guys knew this, right? That it's terrible to just blink new images at you and have no transition. It's only now that we've really got. Kind of in general availability, computer hardware that can actually do this in real time.
Interestingly, that's the one thing about Vista that I miss when I go back to XP is the little kind of subtle squish thing that you get when you minimize a window. The thing that blew us away so many years ago in the OS X, the Genie effect. I gave my dad a Mac last week and he loves that stuff. It's just that, it's there now. Oh,
right.
Look, it's still going. The video is still running in the thumbnail.
So I would say that for me, the big things going forward that I see now, 15 years is a hell of a long time, but I would say more and more declarative, which we brought up a little bit. And certainly when we talk to UI designing and data designing and, you know, the Excel style, that's all very declarative, right?
Mm-hmm.
Here's how I want this stuff to relate. And I would say that, you know, direct manipulation of things, right? Visual, right now, the kind of the biggest thing we've got for programmers is a few designers and code. And if we can get to more declarative coding styles, and if we can get to kind of domain-specific designers, and if we could even go crazy with these, you know, data gloves or, you know, $30 cameras watching my gestures so I can manipulate the data or the definitions of that data or the interactions between the data.
So you're saying that it's the end of Model 3. The whole data, here's the view, and here's the data.
Right. It's all together.
It's just the same thing.
Yeah. And in fact, I could imagine, you know, today I sit down and write an Excel app and get the results I want and throw it away. Tomorrow, sitting down and writing a real app with a tree view and a list view and data really bound in real time, getting the result I want and throwing it away because it's that fast to
I would actually extend that. And one of my things would be true location transparency, not in the object-y way, but in the application way. Right now, Google is off trying to make Google PowerPoint, right?
Sure.
And that's just, there are two kinds of apps now. There's ones that run on your machine, and there's ones that run on the server.
Right.
And I think that we're going to blur that so much that there's not going to be a way to really put your finger on where this thing's running.
So I would say that Flash was an attempt at that. Ajax is an attempt
Apollo
at that.
Apollo is an attempt at that.
I look at Silverlight. As a big attempt at that. Absolutely. Yeah. Right? To be able to merge the benefits of the multiple platforms.
Who's doing the work? There's really no way to tell with the Silverlight application where the calculation is occurring.
Right.
And that's probably okay.
Oh, absolutely. So long as it happens, I don't really care where.
I want to know when the windowing interface is going to be done.
What do you mean?
Well, right now, the closest thing we've done in Vista to really blowing people's minds as far as fundamentally challenging metaphors is like flip 3D and those kinds of things, you know, when you introduce just, you know, 3D space, but it doesn't actually provide any value. It doesn't provide any data. Oh, look, a Z-axis. Yay. but is it all just, is the human brain hardwired for pointers and icons and windows?
Oh, clearly.
There's got to be a different metaphor.
I agree with that. And I know that a ton of people have spent time with this, but even so, if you look at, you know, the guy who's been doing the cool interaction stuff, like, he's got a table full of pictures that he's rearranging and resizing.
Well, and they're squares with stuff in them.
Yeah. On the other hand, he's got a 3D map view.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
so, you know, he's starting to get it. They're starting to get into the 3D stuff.
Did you see the build your own glove to manipulate Google Earth? Basically,
no.
You buy a pair of gloves and you paint the fingers of them. You hook up a camera and he will detect your fingers based on the color and allow you to manipulate the Google Earth.
Oh, man. That rocks. So, declarative. Direct manipulation of data as well as UI. And domain-specific languages, I see, or domain-specific editors. And even crazy stuff like, you know, direct manipulation with hand gestures and voice and ink. I see those as big things coming.
Cool. Maybe I'll see you again in a couple weeks.
Absolutely. Happy to have you here.
Well, thanks, you guys, for listening to us babble in the office of Chris Sells. And this has been another episode of Hansel Minutes.